Good morning. Well, I've never had a hard time grieving, so this is sort of like my debutante party, this loss of Mary Oliver. So bear with me. It's an honor to be here with you to share a few of my thoughts about the poet Mary Oliver, who also became a dear, dear friend of mine. It's nearly impossible for me to say the love that I felt for her. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to read a poem that I wrote about her, and share some thoughts with you about her, things that you might not know, things that I'm pretty sure you don't know, and then I'll finish with another poem. The Coleman who appears in both poems is my best friend, the poet Coleman Barks, who's best known for his translations of Jalaluddin Rumi. And it's through Coleman that I was introduced to Mary. And it's one of the many things that I'll be grateful to him for forever. This first poem's called Bear With Me, and it's got an epigram from A.A. Milne. Surely you know who that is. The epigram is, "We'll be friends forever, won't we, Pooh?" asked Piglet. "Longer than that," Pooh answered. Bear with me while I try to describe the sight of Mary's arm tucked into Coleman's, the two of them taking such small and concentrated steps due to the fragility and the neuropathy. Or is it just the grace of God? Her arm in his, their slow and steady footsteps to the car from the restaurant, his low murmur, her unbridled laugh. Easy now. The three of us walked behind them. My daughter said, "They're adorable." My friend said, "I can't take it." I said, "Pooh and Piglet." And so they seemed, big old gentle bear, tiny fierce friend bundled in pink beside him, bolstered by each other for whatever wind comes next. The three of us watched as they inched toward the car, Mary's head resting lightly against his arm, holding hers. We watched love take careful steps, one at a time, and we followed. Way, way, way longer than forever. Easy now. So Mary Oliver, personally, she was funny, she was feisty, she was no nonsense, she was goofy, she was stealthy. A few illustrations. When I visited her in early December, I was there, and one of the many functions that I was serving was springing her full-time caregiver, who's a great friend of mine, who took care of Mary for the last 3.5 years of her life. And this one night, Trish was headed off to see her girlfriend, and I said to Trish, "Could you just go get me a bottle of wine before you go?" And Mary caught all that and pulled Trish over and whispered, and I looked at Trish a little concerned, and she said, "I'll tell you later." So Mary had an envelope of secret cash that she kept under her typewriter, and it was called floating money. And she had that written on the envelope, so it was for like any clandestine, you know, activities that might happen out of her humble little house. There was a stash to cover things like that. So there would be no paper trail for my bottle of Pinot Grigio. Mary Oliver had me covered. She could make these expressions like without even moving her eyes and her eyebrows, like say if the waitress was coming on a little too strong, or oh, like in a waiting room waiting for chemotherapy, you'd just look up at her and she'd give you a look and you'd have to leave the room, you know, like a fifth grader got caught laughing, making fun of the teacher. Her sense of humor, brilliant. On one of the recent visits, she was had a lot of pain medication and needed to get up to shift to her bedroom to lay down. And while I helped her up, she was really teetering. And she said, "Who boy? Who let Bill Cosby in?" And she was practical. I went through a really, really difficult several years of losing many things in my life, including a business and a marriage, and not all of it went down smoothly. And Mary called me one day, and I was in the middle of a breakdown, and all she could get out of me, what had happened when she called was I had broken the vacuum cleaner, but it was the final straw for me, so I was barely like, "Hey, of course you caught it, you know," and she was like, "Just slow down and tell me," and I was trying to tell her, and I broke the vacuum, so I settled down, and I called her, you know, I called her back the next day to let her know that I was okay, and I was like, "Mary, I'm," and she said, "You don't have to say anything, I knew it wasn't going to be a vacuum cleaner that took you down." Besides the funny parts, you know, what I'm learning more in her absence, more than her presence, and what's stunning me the most is how hard she worked. I think so many people just thought it was easy for her to be that bewildered and dazzled, and the poems are so effortless to read. I think most of us think they were effortless to write, but Mary was one of the hardest working poets that I'll ever know. A few years before she died, Coleman gave me a begging bowl. It's about 800 years old, and beautiful thing that he found for me on Amazon. And he gave it to me when we were down in Florida visiting her, and we went to show it to her when we visited the next day, and she thought it was a gift for her. And Coleman started to, and I just, you know, smacked his hand away, and she said, "It's perfect. I know exactly what to do with it." So, in the week after she died, and I was with Mary for the last week of her life, and I was in bed with her, holding her when she passed, with my friend Tricia on the other side, and her new puppy Mason at our feet. When we tidied up her room a little bit, I found the begging bowl on the top shelf. She lived like a monk. They had to create room for a caregiver. Her partner needed her own bedroom. So Mary lived in a small monk-like room with a cot and with her workspace. And on the top shelf was the begging bowl. And when I pulled it down a few days after she died, there were these talismans. There was a bone from a whale, and there was a feather from a bluebird. And there were all these little strips of paper that looked like confetti. And when I pulled them out, they were all little strips of paper with Rumi quotes. Rumi was her great inspiration. So this is in the last 3 years of her life, when language was leaving her, painfully so. The ability to write was really leaving her, and that was anguish for her. She still, because she used a typewriter till the end, she put that piece of paper in the typewriter and wrote quote after quote. And then she cut them. And every day, she would try to write something new. And she didn't do that for herself. She did that for all of us. All of us. This last memory, Penguin, who's Mary's publisher, has found the perfect person to write Mary's biography. She's a young woman named Lindsay Whalen, and the biography will come out in 2020. She wrote a short tribute to Mary in the days following her death, and this is the final paragraph by Lindsay Whalen. "On one of my last visits to Florida in December, we sat in her bedroom talking, and I noticed that there was a page in her typewriter. By then, illness had made life in the body difficult. And when I moved closer to the desk, I saw that the page was hammered with letters, not all of them decipherable. In the center were the words on the page that I believe are her message to all of us. keep trying. One last poem. Snow in a Florida breeze. I don't know if Mary is as ready to die as Coleman is or thinks he is, but if she is, this would be the time. A few more sunsets, that final sip of coffee, a week or so of morphine, then the smooth and always too fast sleigh ride downhill. Snow and a Florida breeze and a swift re-entry into the light she never left despite the many darks that tried to take it. I do know that when she comes back to see me, she will be riding on a cloud that looks like Percy. And I will run down the beach in the way I thought I'd forgotten, faster and faster and faster, until, at last, I catch up with her again.
You know, each of us falls in love with Mary Oliver and her poetry in a slightly different way. And while I do know that some here might not actually read poetry for fun, or might not even know who Mary Oliver is, you will by the end of this service, and I hope you go read her work. For me, it was not the poetry first, as remarkable as her poetry is. It was this picture on the cover of a book dedicated to her female partner, unabashedly and unequivocally smitten to her core. It was her quiet, unapologetic, and magnetic love of seeing no necessity to explain or justify her same-sex relationship to a world that wasn't at that time entirely ready to embrace that notion. She taught me not to apologize for the fullness of my being, and she taught many of you the same lesson, I know. I can't imagine a better, a more profound gift than that. And she was a remarkable poet, but that's not the totality of her legacy. Because if you read her work and if you read the work written about her, she fought her own history and her own demons, publicly and privately both, and shared just enough to let others know what strength it must have taken for her to open herself up this way and look deeply inside. And as you know, and as I know, that's where the healing happens. At the center of our pain, at the center of our mess, our confusion, therein lies the potential for so much more. If we're willing to look openly, honestly, and without self-censure. In one of her poems, Hurricanes, she intones, "It didn't behave like anything you had ever imagined. The wind tore at the trees. The rain fell for days slant and hard. The back of the hand to everything. I watched the trees bow and the leaves fall and crawl back into the earth. As though that was that. This was one hurricane I had lived through. The other one was of a different sort and lasted longer. Then I felt my own leaves giving up and falling. The back of the hand to everything. But listen now to what happened to the actual trees. Toward the end of the summer, they pushed new leaves from their stubbed limbs. It was the wrong season, yes, but they couldn't stop. They looked like telephone poles and didn't care. and after the leaves came blossoms. For some things there are no wrong seasons, which is what I dream of for me. Mary Oliver's poetry wasn't just beautiful, it was transformative. What will you do with your one wild and precious life? She seems to almost exclaim in a way that stops us short and asks us, what will we do? How do we want to spend our days here? But she always asked gently too, often affirming that we each have slightly different paths or maybe very different paths. And we can honor where we are in that moment. An invitation, she says quietly. Oh, do you have time to linger for just a little while out of your busy and very important day for the goldfinches that have gathered in a field of thistles for a musical battle? To see who can sing the highest note or the lowest or the most expressive of mirth or the most tender. Their strong, blunt beaks drink the air as they strive melodiously, not for your sake, and not for mine, and not for the sake of winning, but for the sheer delight and gratitude. Believe us, they say, it is a serious thing to just be alive on this fresh morning in the broken world. I beg of you, do not walk by without attending to this rather ridiculous performance. It could mean something. It could mean everything. It could be what Rilke meant when he wrote, you must change your life. And Mary Oliver taught us how to be. I didn't expect this to make me emotional. And perhaps most importantly, how to be still, as Donna said so well, to look, to listen, to notice. Mary Oliver taught us Unitarian Universalists. She taught us heathens and heretics, us theists and pagans, us believers and agnostics. She taught us how to pray. How in the midst of a hugely imperfect world to notice the everyday perfection and then fall to our knees in gratitude. In mysteries, yes, she wrote, truly, we live with mysteries too marvelous to be understood. How grass can be nourishing in the mouth of lambs. How rivers and stones are forever in allegiance with gravity. Will we ourselves dream of rising? How two hands touch and the bonds will never be broken. How people come from delight or the scar of damage to the comfort of a poem. Let me keep my distance always from those that think they have the answers. Let me keep company always with those who say, look, and laugh with astonishment and bow their heads. So as I honor and celebrate the poet and the person Mary Oliver, I do so with her own words, and I do so with a little bit of gesture towards my own partner and her beekeeping. This is my hope of what might have greeted Mary as she left this mortal world. It's called honey at the table. It fills you with the soft essence of vanished flowers. It becomes a trickle sharp as a hair that you follow from the honey pot over the table and out the door and over the ground, and all the while it thickens, grows deeper and wilder, edged with pine boughs and wet boulders, paw prints of bobcat and bear, until deep in the forest you shuffle up to some tree. You rip the bark, you float into and swallow the dripping combs, bits of the tree, crushed bees. paste composed of everything lost, in which everything lost is found. May the world that she opened for so many of us greet her with wide open arms as she becomes part of the natural world she so revered. Blessed be.